Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday morning, July 8th. Currently 64 degrees here in Old Town Park City and 62 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Wednesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast on this hump day. Let's talk about that weather. We're looking at mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies developing once again for us today. There is that chance of a couple of those high base isolated showers, primarily with some gusty winds and some lightning, but can't rule off a brief downpour as well. Temperatures climbing into the upper 80s for highs in Park City, will be into the mid 90s for highs over towards the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Thursday, we're looking at mostly sunny skies. Temperatures still on the warm side. Upper 80s expected for us in Park City. Once again, we'll see those highs in the low to mid 90s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into your Friday, here comes the heat dome. It begins to shift directly over Utah, and that brings us a heat wave as we make our way into the weekend, and that's going to mean some of the hottest temperatures potentially so far this season. It starts on your Friday with highs in the low 90s in Park City. We'll see those highs in the mid to upper 90s in the Heber Valley. But it gets even hotter Saturday. I've got mostly sunny skies. Temperatures in Park City will likely climb into the mid 90s for highs. We'll see those high temperatures right around 100 degrees in the Heber Valley. But even warmer weather arrives. On Sunday, I think, will be the hottest day of the heat wave across the entire Beehive State. And that means, yes, even for the Wasatch Back, we're going to be looking at some hot temperatures. Folks, we're looking at high temperatures in the upper 90s, nearing 100 degrees in Park City on your Sunday. Meanwhile, the Heber Valley, you're definitely going to be in the triple digits as we climb to around 103 to 104 as we go throughout your Sunday afternoon. That is a dangerous heat risks right there for most of the area. That means, yes, if you're not taking the necessary precautions, you could become susceptible to some of the heat dangers out there. So be very careful and plan ahead for this weekend. It stays hot on Monday with mid-90s in Park City and highs near 100 in the Heber Valley. That's the latest on your forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
In just a minute, we'll be checking in with the director of exhibits from Swanner Preserve and Eco Center, Hunter Klingensmith. Later on, Egyptian theater director Randy Barton with details about the theater being scammed out of tens of thousands of dollars. Also, an upcoming reunion. Park City Manager Adam Lenhart and Deputy City Manager Jody Emery preview this week's City Council meeting. And from the Heber Valley Chamber, Public Relations Manager Jessica Turner with a rundown of some upcoming events. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include physician scientist Florence Comite, who explores the latest advances in longevity science and how personalized medicine is transforming the way we age. Then a conversation with Dr. Kevin Tracy, talking about one little-known nerve which may hold the key to controlling inflammation and treating autoimmune disease, the vagus nerve. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, heard every Wednesday from 9 to 10. In the studio now with an update from the Swanner Preserve and Eco Center, it's the director of exhibits, Hunter Klingensmith. Good morning, Hunter.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, lots going on at the preserve.
Yeah.
Take it away.
Yeah, it's been busy. We've had lots of wildlife out there. There's been a mama moose with two baby calves, which has been pretty exciting. We haven't seen her in a couple weeks, but she's been around a lot. And then we have all kinds of fun events coming up. So, most recent, we have on Sunday, we have Be Nice to Bugs Day on Sunday, July 12th. That's a family program. It's a drop-in activity anytime between 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. We'll have Christy Bills, the entomologist from the Natural History Museum of Utah, there with some live insects and some specimens. We'll be making potato bug terrariums, and we have some other fun bug-themed activities. So great for all ages. Anyone who's interested in bugs or insects and wants to learn more should come. We also have Bike and Botany coming up on Thursday, July 16th. This will be our third year doing this event in partnership with Basin Recreation and the Summit Bike Share Program. We're going to bike from Swanner to Willow Creek Park, and we'll stop and look at plants and invasive species, talk about how to remove them on our way. So it's kind of a different way to get out there and look around.
Okay, and are these free events?
Both of those events are free. We do no registration needed for the family day, the Bugs Day, but for Bike and Botany, we do require registration just so we can make sure you have a bike or if you need it from Summit Bike Share.
Okay. And then a paid event coming up early next month.
Yeah, that's our Wine Among the Willows event. So this will be our fifth year doing that event. We do it in partnership with Vine Lore Wine and Spirits, and they help to bring us some sustainable, biodynamic wines. So you can learn about how the wine industry is adapting to a changing climate and how they're producing great wine. So you'll have a chance to go. That one, the fee for that one is $85 per ticket or $65 if you're a Swanner member. And we'll rotate through five different stations where you'll get to taste different wines at each station with experts that can talk about those wines and help you to learn about them.
All right. Again, that's a 21 and older event.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. And then you also have some early open hours.
Yeah, we're doing early open hours on the third, I think I told you the third Wednesday, but it's the third Saturday of every month. And so that will be this coming Saturday, two Saturdays from now, July 18th, and then August 15th will be the next one after that. And we're open at 8 a.m. And that's just a chance to get out onto the preserve a little bit earlier, spend some time on the back deck. It's a great time for birding. We've had a lot of requests for being able to kind of access that back deck and boardwalk a little earlier in the morning. So we're testing it out this summer. And so that's the third Saturday of every month. You can come out a little earlier.
Okay. Do you have binoculars available?
We do have binoculars available. Lots of them, kid size, adult size, whatever you need.
Okay. And I was going to ask you a little bit about the wildlife. I mean, we've been seeing like sandhill cranes walking down the street in Prospector. What's going on?
I think they're just still looking for the best food options, trying to find the places to be. I know there's a little less water in that stream kind of along the rail trail than there is sometimes, although with the rain last week, we did see a little more water there. But they might just be looking for good food sources. We've been seeing lots of sandhill cranes on the preserve. I think we had quite a few nesting pairs that have babies this year. We haven't been seeing them. The babies are getting bigger, so they're moving farther, and we haven't been seeing them as close to the eco center as we have in the past. But still they're out there, and then in September they'll kind of fly to New Mexico. And then we've been seeing lots of deer. There's been, like I said, a mama moose with two calves that has been like right next to the eco center in the past couple weeks. So we're trying to stay safe with that, but also a really great opportunity to be able to see them.
Yeah, and are those animals, are they territorial in a sense? I mean, that the fact that she comes back every year?
Yeah, I've been at Swanner for 12 years, and in the first few years, I don't think I ever saw moose there. And then in the last 2 years, there's been a mom with two babies. Obviously, she's not tagged, so we don't know that it's the same one. But I think that they know that it's kind of a protected area. Willows are like one of the best sources of food for those calves, and we have a lot of willows there. So I think she's just kind of found a little niche. But she is very protective, of course, of her babies. So it's exciting that we can see them so close, but also we're just reminding people as you walk along the path, just keep an eye out, be attentive to your surroundings, and make sure that if there is a moose, you're giving them lots of space. Our rule of thumb is that if you can cover an animal with your thumb, especially large mammals like that, that's kind of a safe distance to be. So obviously standing right next to them by the fence is not the place to be, and they can jump over the fence. So just a forewarning.
Very long legs. Yes.
Very long legs.
Tell me, in terms of the events, everybody can find more information online?
Yep, swannerecocenter.org.
Okay, and that's the place for the tickets for the Wine Among the Willows as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, anything else?
Nope, I think that's it. Thank you, Leslie.
All right, thank you. Hunter Klingensmith, again, the Swanner Director of Exhibits for the Swanner Eco Center and Preserve. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. A hacker broke into the Egyptian Theater's bank account a couple of weeks ago, stealing tens of thousands of dollars. In the studio to tell us more about that, as well as an upcoming reunion, I have theater director Randy Barton. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning.
Let's start with the bad news. An employee's cell phone apparently hacked a few weeks ago. What happened?
Well, we're not sure exactly how they gained access, but a week ago, we just got notice that $65,000 was missing from our account that had been wired to someone that we had no idea who they were, and, you know, called the police and the bank and the FBI. And, you know, it's just one of those, you know, times where you feel victimized and there's nothing you can do about it. You know, if somebody were to walk in here with a gun and take $65,000, that would be a big deal. But it seems like these cyber crimes are just like it's your fault almost as much as the person that did it, but it doesn't feel like that. You know, we're a public entity, and it's really nobody's money other than public money, the donors and the government. And, you know, it's like, I guess, you know, the history of mankind's always been one of pirates and scallywags and thieves, so it never ends.
So it was a phishing attempt? I mean, is that what happened? A link was sent? And
Somebody somehow was able to wire themselves out of our account $65,000. And then they got greedy and decided to call the bank and see if they could increase the wire amount and get more. And that's when the bank said, you don't sound like, you know, you're with the theater, and then clamped down on it.
Wow, so it was gone before you could do anything.
Yeah.
And there's no trace of it, huh?
Well, you know, hopefully, you know, we have a wonderful, you know, law enforcement department here that we have case number and they're working on it. But yeah, it's gone.
Yeah, so was any of your donors' information compromised?
No. And, you know, it's still under investigation as to how they actually did it. But it was very sophisticated because, you know, our email, we get notifications when things happen. But they had been able to get into the email also and put in some scenarios that if you receive an email from Zions Bank, forward it to this email address. So we didn't find out about it, you know, immediately and able to do something about it. So, you know, it's gone, and we had to change accounts, and, you know, it's like wah, wah, wah pedal. But, you know, it's tragic that people get away with that, you know? And they're probably not even, you know, close that we could, you know, apprehend them.
Right. So does insurance cover something like this?
You know, it depends. We'll find out all of that, you know, is to be determined.
So what kind of financial bind has that put you into?
Well, it was rough. You know, we had payroll. You know how it is as a nonprofit. You know, you lose that kind of money, and that's a big setback. So we had to juggle and, you know, move stuff around. And, I mean, you know, we did it, but it's still, it just leaves you feeling very vulnerable. And then you overreact and, you know, worry about it more than you should, I think.
Yeah. Any advice then for people to avoid something like this happening to them?
No. I wish I did. I mean, we had everything in place, you know, and somehow, some way, you know, you just, I don't know. I mean, you can't stick it all in your mattress, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we have so much good news, though, Leslie.
Yeah.
This is our 100th anniversary, as you know, and, you know, that's kind of what I really wanted to talk about. But
well, that's what I was going to mention, that you are embarking on a campaign to help build the theater's endowment. So tell me about that.
Yeah, we're 100 years old as of Christmas Day this year, and we have a whole bunch of big events coming up to celebrate that. But we're also, you know, looking back at our past and our present and our future, and that is the title of what we're doing. It's 100-100 Project. Our 100 years past, now what about the 100 future? And looking back, you know, every 10 years something happens and we collapse, you know, and we're almost out of business and we're struggling, you know. And I just look back to 2020 and had the federal government not, you know, come through with rescue money, we wouldn't have made it. And then 2009, we were out of business, owing money, and, you know, insolvent. And then you go back, and it seems to always be things that are outside of your control, the big crash, you know. But even going back to the founding of this town, you know, we had the great fire, then we had the, you know, our theater fell down in a snowstorm, and then we had the Depression, and then we had World War II, and, you know, it just goes on and on. And at one point, we were, you know, foreclosed on by the federal government because the owners of the building, you know, Debbie and Randy Fields, Miss Fields Cookies, lost all their properties. So it's like stuff out of our control. So the idea of this is, let's get control of it and create an endowment for our beautiful jewel of Main Street that we can get through whatever the next shoe is to fall, you know, because chances are it's in 2 or 3 years. It seems to always be at the end of a decade.
Yeah. So the Pharaoh's Club, again, that's you've done really well with that. That provides some of the sustaining. Is that just the day-to-day dollars, though?
Mm-hmm. That's operational funding right there. And that is tremendous right now. You know, it gives us the opportunity to program every weekend. You know, we don't have an off season. We are there, you know, four nights a week, usually four people here in Park City. And what you don't see is the ongoing youth theater program that is fully funded by the supporters of the theater. You know, a couple of thousand kids a year that, you know, are just learning to act, dance, and sing in our basement. So very proud of what we're doing. And, you know, you mentioned, I heard in your intro, that we're hosting a great big event that I hope to be an annual event. I hope this is one of those things that catches on, and we do it every year, called Park City Reunion, Picnic in the Park, where we're inviting families, businesses, people, anybody that's called Park City home, no matter what decade you arrived, to come join us in City Park on the day before Miners Day, September the 6th. And we will have flags all over the park that say 1920s and before, 1930s. And we'll have little placards that people will write the year that they arrived in Park City, and then on the other side, the year their family or their heritage arrived. And it will be very interesting to see how many people come celebrate themselves and Park City and all of our connection to this beautiful little town.
All right, so save the date, Sunday, September 6th. Do people need mm-hmm. to register or anything?
No, it's free, open. It'll be 5 to 7 p.m., and we have partners, the Chamber, the Rotary Club, the Museum, Mountain Town Music, and all helping us out to promote the event.
Okay, so you're going to
have... And the city itself. You know, the city is very eager to make this an annual tradition.
Okay, so that's going to be live music then?
No music,
no
just
music.
A gathering,
okay.
Just 5 to 7, just socialize, you know, and see people you haven't seen, and, you know, just really kick off what is really our local celebration, Miners Day, you know, where we celebrate the history of this town. So why not include us in the history?
Okay, because I know that the 70s reunion happening the weekend after.
Mm-hmm, yep, where people from one decade get together.
Okay.
But those 70s people, they're old hippies.
What are you going to have at yours?
Yeah, so we want to get together as an entire community from, you know, we're 1920s, that theater. I'm going to have Jake dress up as the theater itself and be there.
Yeah, did a terrific job with the float.
But it's all on our site, you know, and that's one of our four main events. So then we celebrate our 45th anniversary of Park City performances on October 10th with Chris Isaac. We celebrate our whole history. We're going to tell the history of Showtime on Main Street. Museum right now has the history of parades, but we're going to do everything that has to do with arts and culture and shows, from the many stages that we've had on Main Street, from it being no electricity, Tin Pan Alley, the railroad, all the way to today, and showcase arts and culture on Main Street. And that's in November. And then our actual birthday, Christmas Day, we will be there with Kurt Bester and some very special guests. And we're going to bury a time capsule on that day that we hope won't be open until 2126. So at the end of this next 100 years.
Okay, who's going to know about to dig that up?
We'll put a little placard somewhere, and the AI will bring me back to officiate it somehow.
Okay, let's see. I also wanted to mention, coming up this weekend, you've got Frozen the Musical. This is a Ziegfeld production, not your theater.
Mm-hmm. Yep, this is the full Frozen the Musical, you know, wonderful professional presentation, and ticket sales going very well.
Good. What about Chris Isaac? Are those sold out?
Well, we have a long wait list, but yeah, that's our big celebration of our 45th anniversary. So people just need to get their name on the wait list. And, you know, people buy tickets way in advance and then they don't show up, and, you know, we'll get a lot of people in.
Okay, and then tell me about Jamie Wilcox, your longtime youth theater director. She's moved on, or do you have somebody else?
Yeah, Amy Livingston, she was also a longtime part of our youth theater, is now the director, and it's going great. We're having a full summer program, and you see, I just love driving into town, seeing the kids all over town. You know, that's what we need, because that's what's missing. People don't live here in town anymore. We have to import kids.
Okay. Any other events you wanted to highlight here?
I think that's it. It's all at parkcityshows.com. But thanks to the community for their support. And, you know, we're the longest continuous use in Park City, other than, I believe, the old St. Mary's Church. So very proud of that theater and how it's been able to survive. And come celebrate with us. See a show.
Okay. Randy Barton, theater executive of the Egyptian Theater, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, the Park City Council meets in work session Thursday, starting at 3:40 with a discussion about the Senior Center. In the studio with a preview of the meeting, I have City Manager Adam Lenhart along with Deputy City Attorney Jody Emery. Good morning to both of you. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning. Deputy City Manager.
I'm
not an attorney.
I don't know why I was thinking you were, but Adam, let's start with the Senior Center. Where are we with this?
In May of 2025, the council identified the Mawinney lot as the preferred site, and staff are going to be presenting an update on the overall project. We're going to be seeking direction from the council in terms of moving forward with schematic design. We've previously discussed with the council a range of square footage on the building between 13 and 15,000 square feet. This is all still very conceptual. It's got to go through the entire land use process. But we'll be asking the council for direction to move forward in schematic design, which would include the overall floor plan, square footage, dimensions of the building. It's contemplated to be two stories. The Mawinney lot, I think most are probably familiar with that, but if you're not, that's on Park Avenue across from the library on the east side. And the council will provide some direction there, and we anticipate moving forward quickly.
Yeah, so what design decisions, you know, are you looking for input on?
A lot of the concept design has been completed. It's a two-story building with a 7,500 square floor plate. And so we'll be asking the council to confirm that previous work and move forward with the overall design process.
Okay, so does the schematic design give you a final cost estimate, or do you have to wait for like final design?
Schematic design gets us a lot of the way there. It solidifies the floor plan, it gives us the square footage, the overall dimensions. It's good enough for us to do an accurate cost estimate.
Okay, and so what do you thinking it's going to cost?
We anticipate that it's going to cost up to $15 million. That would be the city's contribution. We set aside funds in fiscal year 26, which carry forward to the current fiscal year. We've allocated additional money this fiscal year, and we anticipate that the majority of the construction would happen in fiscal year 28, and we've already earmarked those funds as well.
Okay, and will Summit County be pitching in, since senior centers are kind of county functions?
They are. We actually show that about 60% of the users of the Park City Senior Center are not Park City residents. Many do have that Park City zip code, but we anticipate the county will participate to some degree. I don't want to speak on their behalf. I know that the county has hired a consultant, the Hill Group, that is looking at senior services across the county, and that report should likely be completed in August, maybe early September. They will present to the county council, and the findings of that study will inform the county council's decision, and we'll wait and see where they land.
Yeah, so do you know what this study is looking at?
All senior services. We've seen a draft of that study. We've been able to meet with the consultant as a stakeholder. And we're excited to see the final report.
So is the survey out somewhere?
They've been doing public engagement, variety of different public meetings.
All right, so we don't know what it says yet, not until at least August.
Correct.
Yeah. The parking decision, I think the council had decided no underground parking, just given you don't know what you're going to find when you start digging up soil there in the Old Town area. Is that short-sighted at all, just given the silver tsunami that we know is coming?
We do know it's coming. Fortunately, that area is so well served by mass transit, and that provides just wonderful accessibility to the building. We're targeting 52 surface stalls, and we're looking for more in the vicinity, but we also want to be really sensitive to the fact that historically, you know, for many years at least, it's been nice and green, and it's got this wonderful open space feel, and we want to be able to preserve that as much as we can.
Okay. Let's see. Jody, let's turn to the Little Kate Road project. Two open houses were held in June where you got lots of feedback. So do you have the results somewhere?
We do. So part of the work session on Thursday is intended to provide council with an update on that community engagement that's been conducted since April 30th of this year. And they'll be providing a summary of the key themes and the feedback received, as well as an overview on the four concepts that are currently under evaluation. And they'll be discussing the potential trade-offs and next steps.
Okay, so what did the survey tell you?
Well, the public really prefers a minimal roadway change. So concept 1A, which obviously radio, I can't show you, is the only concept really with majority support. We do have some support for no roadway changes at all. So we will be talking about that as well. But the concept 1A is really similar to the existing road. And it provides a wider painted buffer between bike and vehicle travel lanes. I think that's the greatest upgrade there. And the existing sidewalk as part of this could either stay the same or be slightly widened.
Okay. Is there room to do that, to widen?
There is room, absolutely. Yeah. I think the current footprint is about 40 feet. And I think that the proposal 1A allows for 40 feet and potentially just slightly wider.
All right. Now, widening the bike lanes in the street would make the street narrower. Is that kind of a traffic calming effort? Because I think the survey also said that those driving on Little Kate are always going too fast.
Right. Speed is an issue. That is one thing that's been part of the consideration here. Our traffic data collected in 2025 shows that an 85th percentile speed of approximately 30 miles per hour, and it's a 20 mile per hour zone, so speed is an issue. However, I don't know that they're planning to shrink the travel lanes at all. Where I think concept 1A is showing about a 10-foot travel lane, and that's what's currently on the road.
All right, so will a decision be made, at least in the direction to
we anticipate forward? Direction. This is in work session, mm-hmm. So we won't necessarily be having any decisions made, but we are looking for a preferred alternative so that we can move forward with design.
Okay, how many people say do nothing? It works as it is.
It was about 30%. 35%. About 35% did prefer a do nothing option.
Yeah, compared to the option 1A.
Yeah.
You
know what? I don't actually have that number, and I don't recall it. So I just know that is the option that received majority support.
Okay. Moving on to changes with the city's way that it procures things. This would, if approved, double the amount of what I think Adam or any administrator could spend purchasing things from $50,000 to $100,000. Is that just because things are so much more expensive?
That is absolutely part of it. But actually, this is to bring us in alignment with Utah's $100,000 threshold for professional services. So we're looking to gain also some efficiency and save some money because at $50,000, you go to an RFP. RFPs cost us, we think, approximately $12,000 per RFP. It's extremely expensive. There's a lot of work and a lot of time that goes into doing an RFP. And so taking that threshold up to $100,000 is a little bit more efficient. Now, it doesn't mean that we aren't going to also go through a process. So the small purchase process in Utah, or actually Park City's procurement rules, require that we obtain a minimum of 3 quotes that meet minimum specifications or a review of qualifications of 3 or more design professionals before selecting a vendor. So there still is a selection process that allows us to choose the best vendor. It's just a lot more efficient for us to not go through that RFP process.
Okay. What's the latest with our sales tax numbers? I think you have the April report, Adam.
We do. We have the numbers for April, and what we're seeing is a continuation of a very weak winter. We saw overall a decline of about 5% in what we projected for our April sales tax revenues. That decline was driven largely, overwhelmingly, I would say, by our transient room tax or our visitation. The good news, I guess the silver lining, is that the broader sales tax base showed some great resiliency. And so that gives us a little bit of cautious optimism as we look forward. Another really important note, I think, is that our April sales tax is typically, if not the lowest, the second lowest. April and May tend to be our lowest overall in terms of revenue. And it constitutes about 5% of the overall sales tax revenue. So, in terms of the total numbers, not a huge decline, but certainly something that was expected just with the overall winter season.
Okay, so at this point, it's just a 5% overall decline through...
In April, just for the month.
Oh, just for the month, yes. Okay. So yeah. Year-to-date then, are we doing okay?
Year-to-date, since January, I want to provide you that exact number. I believe that we're down 2% is what it looks like.
Okay. All right, let's move on to the Bonanza Winter Shuttle. There'll be a discussion just kind of how successful it was, and I guess the decision to whether or not, given the outcome, does it get continued for another winter?
Great question. So in 2025, we instituted the Bonanza Flat Summer Paid Parking Program, and there were a lot of great reasons for that. That program was very successful. We took the revenue, actually the profit from that program, the surplus revenues, and we put them towards this pilot program. And it was very successful. We had very high ridership, nearly 4,000 riders over 15 weekends. And based on what we saw during that pilot, it gives us a lot of great data, first of all, but certainly the confidence to consider moving forward, finding a more permanent funding source, because we believe that ridership will continue to be very high for that service.
Yeah, the difficulty with the winter shuttle is that you need permission to bring the bus up Twisted Branch.
We do have a memorandum of understanding with the private property owner to use their road, Twisted Branch Road, through the wintertime, and we we anticipate that continuing, but that is a very difficult road to access in the wintertime, correct?
Yeah, so is there just certain weekends that you can't use it, like the busy holiday, or, I mean, how does that work?
No particular restrictions. It's general usage for us to use that, weather permitting.
All right, and the Twisted Branch Road, I mean, is that ever going to open to the public, or does it mean that those living in Brighton Estates will have to continue to use State Route 224, as narrow and steep as it is?
For the foreseeable future, yes, they would continue to use 224. There have been a variety of proposals and ideas tossed out about the city taking that road over. So far, we have not seen a proposal that would be in the city's best interest to do so. That is a very challenging spot.
Yeah. And I guess because it would be so nice just to have, leave that 224 open for non-motorized vehicles, right? I mean, if property owners were up at Brighton Estates were able to use Twisted Branch, we could use the other one open so it's not plowed and icy for skiers.
Correct. Yeah, that certainly would be convenient. Unfortunately, the city doesn't control that Twisted Branch Road, and UDOT currently owns and maintains 224.
Okay, so we have seen the relaunch of the summer shuttle. I think it was July 1st. Yeah.
Yep, the 9 Purple Route. It extends all the way to Bonanza Flat and the Bloods Lake Trailheads. That's Friday through Sunday. Service runs every 20 minutes from 5:36 a.m. to 6:18 p.m. It's very busy, very popular route. It's first come, first served. Show up early. When you go to the Old Town Transit Center, there are signs that show you where to queue. And very popular route. And see a lot of ridership there.
Okay, and in other business, Jody, the council will consider a $1.3 million contract to purchase 5 new 34-foot buses. This is what is used to support that number 9 Purple Route to Bonanza Flat. The city usually gets a deal buying buses from federal government, but this sounds like it's all on city taxpayers.
We actually do have some funds identified for this. This is primarily the Flagstaff transfer fee fund balance that is supporting this, as well as some transportation fund balance. The city usually gets a deal. This is what's interesting about this purchase is last month in June, council made some changes to procurement policy that allowed us to jump into other states' contracts, cooperative contracts, because Utah's contract did not have this type of bus. So we were able to take advantage of Georgia's cooperative contract, and we've been able to save a fairly significant amount of money, around $200,000, to purchase these buses. And these are, as you said, the buses that will be going up to Bonanza Flats, and they are replacement. So they're a replacement for our current fleet. That's a very, as you just talked about, it's a very challenging road. It's very steep. It carries high passenger load and bicycles. So those buses get well used.
Okay, and once ordered, when would the buses arrive?
Once they approve it, we would be about 9 months after the contract execution.
Okay. The city's also considering a wayfinding plan. This is, I think, a $45,000 city matching grant to the Mountain Lands Association of Governments $150,000 grant. So what's the scope of the work here?
So we are looking at updating existing vehicular and pathway signage to establish new pedestrian, bicycle, and transit wayfinding. So it will create one coordinated system, so you'll recognize the signage as you go through town, whether you're in a car, walking, or on a bus. We don't know the scope yet. That's what this is actually supporting, is the consultant's work. So we're providing $45,000. MAG is providing $150,000 for the 195 total budget. And, you know, the city's signage was built really piecemeal over the years, and this is going to provide a better coordinated. So we'll know, once that study is completed, we'll know the full scope of it, and that will determine the cost.
Okay. Let's see there, Adam, Park City Heights to Studio Crossing waterline construction project. I think this is to tie the two systems together.
That's right. Yes, correct. That creates a loop in our waterline, in our water system. It improves overall water quality because that water can continue to move through the system. And this is a project that's going to be funded in part by the developers of both of those projects. By combining the two and creating this new connection, we're able to eliminate some very significant infrastructure that would have to be installed if these systems were kept separate. And of course, once the waterline infrastructure is built by the developer, it gets turned over to the city and we have to maintain it. We see a very significant efficiency with this connection. We'll save money in maintenance and time.
All right. And then what about the possible Clark Ranch development? Would this tie into that as
well? No, this would not be connected to that project.
Would you need to eventually connect it?
That would likely be a separate water line.
Okay. Also on the agenda, the Snow Creek Tunnel. Like, this is still happening?
We're almost there, Leslie. We're getting close. We're asking the council for direction. We've narrowed it down to five design alternatives. There is a preferred recommended option. We still have some questions to answer in terms of the overall funding for the project. Most of it's there, but we are hopeful that the council will provide some direction and we can get this thing done.
So the preferred alignment is for a tunnel and not an overpass.
That is correct. A hot crossing at grade, they do work, but in terms of what we're trying to accomplish here, which is to enable pedestrians and vehicles to continue to move freely across 248, the at-grade crossing really would not be our most efficient option.
Yeah, but there was also some talk about like an overpass.
That has not been moved forward in the final options.
All right. Now, does the city then have to pay for all of the right-of-way that it would need to build the tunnel?
The preferred alternative has very few private property impacts, but we have been negotiating with those property owners, and that is included in the overall project budget.
And since it is on a state highway, do you get any money from UDOT?
We do. We've got a UDOT TIF active grant. A lot of the funding comes from our 2007 walkability bond, the county third quarter sales tax. Is contributing our transit fund is kicking in $2.5 million. So variety of funding sources for this, including UDOT.
Okay, and also wanted just to mention that the Bonanza 5 acres is before the Planning Commission tonight. We're still going forward with what was proposed, huh?
Correct. Yes, that process is going through the Planning Commission, and we'll wait and see how that goes.
Okay, and it'll move on to City Council after a recommendation?
Correct. There's still a variety of public meetings, and the process has a lot of parts to it. The development agreement primarily is what the council will be concerned with, and that's probably coming in the next few months, correct?
Okay. Jody, finally, two Wasatch-backed cities, Park City and Midway, were now designated as part of the Utah Main Street program. What does this mean?
Yeah, this is a State Historic Preservation Office program, the Utah Main Street program, and they really try to breathe. They utilize community-driven strategies to breathe new life into downtowns. And Park City and HPCA, so the Historic Preservation
Alliance.
Alliance, thank you. excuse me, are working together on this. And this is really just the tier one of this program. It's a really low barrier to entry, doesn't require any paid staff. And typically a community will spend about a year in tier one. As you move up the tiers, you have an opportunity for more funding opportunities and more support from the program. But what's interesting about this is the tier one program requirements really just mirror what the current structure is of the HPCA. So we're well suited to this. And that includes appointing an executive director, recruiting board members, and setting a district boundary, and then forming a board committee. So we work together on this, and we're looking forward to seeing where this takes us.
Okay. I mean, it's something you had to apply for.
We had to apply. Yeah. We applied back in, July.
Yeah.
No, May. May we've applied.
And you had hoped, you did it because you were hoping there would be some funding available?
Yes, down the road. But there's, as I said, there's multiple tiers that you work your way through, and this is just tier one. There isn't a lot of opportunity here, but it's just really establishing us as a part of this and that we can fulfill all the promises.
Okay. Anything else?
No, we don't have anything else. Thanks so much, Leslie.
Jody Emery, Adam Lenhart, thanks for your time this morning.
Good to see you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. On the phone now with an update from the Heber Valley Chamber, I have Public Relations Manager Jessica Turner. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having us on again, Leslie.
Yeah. So, well, let's just start, get a recap of how the 4th of July Red, White, and Blue Festival went.
Yeah. I mean, it was a busy weekend for sure all across the Wasatch back. Everything from the Oakley Rodeo to the Park City festivities. And Heber Valley celebrated a three-day festival and series of events with the Thursday Market, Friday concert and drone show was at Heber City Park. It was very well attended. We estimate well over 2,000 people were at the park for that event. We had food vendors there as well. It was a really great evening. And then Saturday started off bright and early with flag ceremony in Midway and a 5K and 10K race in Heber. We had record-breaking numbers. Happy to report that. We capped the 10K at 150 runners this year. We're looking to maybe increase that next year just based on growing demand. And the 5K sold out at 450. So we had 600 runners on that course for Saturday morning, which was phenomenal. Okay. Our parade also had a record number of attendees, just based on kind of a head count as we were going through it. This is the second year for the parade and I believe sixth year for our race series. So seeing that growth and that momentum is really fantastic. Of course, a lot of local support across the Wasatch back. So thank you for everybody that came out to celebrate. The festivities went all day, and it all culminated with a really beautiful outdoor concert by the Utah Symphony over in Midway Saturday night.
Okay.
A really exceptional experience.
All right. Well, let's look ahead and talk about some of the upcoming community events.
Yeah, absolutely. So speaking of outdoor, theater, outdoor concerts, High Valley Arts brings their summer outdoor theater experience to the Little Midway area every summer season. This year, they're doing The Little Mermaid. It is not a junior production. Some people have reached out with some questions on that. It is their full-scale, regular, adult-based The Little Mermaid performance. So they've got adult actors and professionals that have come in from all across the northern Utah area to help put on this production. The dates for that are July 3rd through 20th, and it is set to an outdoor theater location just off Main Street in Midway. It's really lovely. So I'm got my tickets for next week.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And the Heber Market in Maine continues every Thursday night?
Every Thursday night, yep. So we've got a booth there set up for the Heber Valley Chamber. If you are curious about what we do and who we are trying to be at the market every Thursday this summer season so that we can meet the people where they, where they go and where they are. We've got some fun games and spin the wheel prizes and a growing art board that we do each week. So stop by and make sure we're on the south end of the park. So make sure you stop by our booth.
Okay. And of course, live music, food booths, and trucks from 5 to 9 p.m.
All the things. Yes, you got it. Yeah, 5 to 9 p.m. there at the Heber City Park.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What else you got going on?
Well, on Saturdays and Sundays, the Commemorative Air Force Museum, which is located at the Heber Valley Airport, is offering tours. Now, this is volunteer ran. There's no set fee. They just ask for a small donation if you can, but it is all based around World War II memorabilia and women in aviation. So Saturdays from 10 to 4 and Sundays 11 to 4. That is extended hours from previous years. In the past, they've only been able to operate on Saturdays, but with some additional volunteer support, they have added Sunday into the schedule. So that'll be all summer season. It's actually a really exceptional, well-done museum, and it does honor those who have served really well with the displays and with some of the knowledge that they can share.
Okay, and a marathon coming up?
Yep, a half marathon at Deer Creek on July 11th. We've also got our Heber Valley half marathon on August 8th. The Ragnar Trail Series is coming to Soldier Hollow August 28th and 29th. They do a trail series typically in the southern part of the state, so this will be their first one up here in our neck of the woods. So mark your calendar and put a team together if you're interested in doing that. So that's a few different races we have throughout the summer months. We've also got some music festivals coming up. So TED Fest, which is an annual music festival held at the R.W. Erickson private property in Waldsburg, will be July 17th through the 19th. And then we've got the Boomer Fest coming up in late August, which will be August 28th through the 30th. So a couple of really great multi-day concert series you can put on your calendar, both out in Waldsburg.
Yeah. Okay. And lots going on in the renovated Avon Theater.
Yes, indeed. Yeah, they just held a grand reopening last weekend, and they've got several performances coming up. So just I'll just rattle these off quickly, but Tomorrow's Anthem will be coming in. It's more youthful and teen-focused with modern music. July 17th, you've got Seven Bridges Road, which is an Eagles tribute band. I saw them 2 years ago at the Ideal Playhouse, which is their other theater. They're coming in the next night on July 18th on Saturday. ABBA Fab, which is an ABBA tribute band, will be August 1st. And then a John Denver tribute will be coming in August 22nd. So a really great smattering of cover performances coming in and all performing at the newly remodeled Avon Theater. They've done a fantastic job there with that remodel. Really great inside that space.
All right.
And then, of course, our Charleston Pioneer Day celebration. So every year, the little town of Charleston, which is just to the west of Heber City, puts on a phenomenal full-day celebration on July 24th. It kicks off with a flag raising in the morning and a really, really great 5K course, followed by a pancake breakfast. They have a car show on site. All of that happening at the Charleston Park, just off Highway 113 and 189 over there in Charleston. And, you know, we'll see if they lift the ban on fireworks. I know that currently it is removed, but we'll see what happens with the wildfire season. But as of now, they are planning for fireworks, and the Fiddlers and Fireworks Heber Valley Railroad train will be running that night. So come on over and help us celebrate. It's a very small town celebration. They've also got a really great parade that they do toward the end of the day as well over there for that.
Okay.
And then
go ahead.
That same weekend, there's a few things happening that weekend. Actually, it's going to be a busy weekend. You'll have a tough time deciding where to spend your time, but we've got the Wasatch Back Heber Art Festival returning for its third year. It'll be happening at the Heber City Park over that same weekend, so July 24th to 26th. The night of the 25th, the Heber Valley Railroad is running their wine and cheese train. This is their first season to run that train. It is a new offering after they were able to get their liquor license in order to serve wine, occasional cocktails and beers, et cetera. So wine and cheese train the night of the 25th, and then, of course, the Derby. The Derby is going to happen over that July 24th date as well. So they'll have three nights of Derby this year, July 23rd, 24th, and 25th, all at the Rodeo Grounds. The following week kicks off our full week-long Wasatch County Fair Days. That's July 27th through August 1st. Everything you would expect and that they've had in the past, so everything from the market that they have, the carnival with all of the rides will be coming in. Of course, the animals, livestock, that's a huge component of any good fair day celebration. And then it all culminates with three nights of rodeo at the end. So July 30th, 31st, and August 1st, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday will be the Mountain Valley Stampede Rodeo. So it's a weekend full of festivities for fair days.
All right. Moving on to the events that the chamber does for its members. Mm-hmm. Talk to me a little bit about some of those coming up.
Yeah, really excited. We have our mixer happening Tuesday next week on July 14th. One of our great sponsors and partners, Black Rock Mountain Resort, is going to be hosting that. They do a phenomenal job. They bring in an exceptional food and beverage spread. It is free. It's from 4 to 6 on Tuesday next week. We just ask that people RSVP on our website. So we have a head count for food, but you don't have to be there the entire time. It's open to chamber members, residents, non-members, open to all. It's a great opportunity to network, mix, and mingle. We do anticipate a higher number of attendees at this one. This is a really popular location for the mixer that they usually host each year. So put that on your schedule and plan to show up for that. Then the following week on Tuesday, July 21st, is our every other month chamber luncheon. We're focusing on entrepreneurial hustle or the entrepreneurs in across the Wasatch Back. Again, open to all residents, businesses, chamber members, and non. There's a small fee to just help us cover that lunch because there is a hard cost there for the lunch. It's much cheaper than anything you can go out and buy on your own. And then you also get the educational aspect. We're going to have a panel of experienced either current entrepreneurs or former entrepreneurs that have had great success with their business and have launched in a really great way across the Wasatch Back. They're going to speak about their experience. It'll be open for some Q&A. We always save room at the end for any business-related announcements. So if you don't have that on your calendar, please put it on there. July 21st, 12 p.m., and it's at the UVU Wasatch campus right off of Highway 40 here in Hebert.
Okay. I'm about out of time. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, a couple of quick plugs. We've got our golf tournament on August 11th happening at Soldier Hollow, 8 a.m. shotgun start. We are still looking for a few players if anyone's interested. And then our next Donuts with the Director will be August 12th at the Visitor Center. And a final quick note is the new MTech facility and campus will be opening this year for this new school season. And they have a tentative ribbon cutting planned for August 27th. So put that on your calendar. We will be there helping celebrate that new MTech campus opening up in the Hebert area.
Okay. Thanks so much, Jessica. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Jessica Turner is the Public Relations Manager for Hebert Valley Chamber. You're listening to KPCW.